Okay, good morning everybody. Welcome to our shiur. The topic of today's shiur is a concept, it's a pasuk in Aseres HaDibros, which is not always understood correctly. And actually there are two pasukim, as we'll see in a moment. The inyan of lo sachmo and lo sesave. So, which literally is translated, lo sachmod, a person should not covet, a person should not want what someone else has. When that applies, when that does not apply, is what I would like to discuss today, and some situations that we may not be so aware of where it actually, where it does apply. So first and foremost, we have to take a look. We have here at the sheet. The Aseres HaDibros are written twice in the Chumash. One is in yesterday's Parsha, Parshas Yisro. And then we have again in the Mishneh Torah when Moshe Rabbeinu repeated the essential mitzvahs that the Klal Yisrael needed before going into Eretz Yisrael in Sefer Devarim. So the Aseres HaDibros were repeated. Now, as we may be familiar, there are certain discrepancies that exists between the two renditions of the Aseres HaDibros. The most famous of them is the fact that when the Torah speaks about the mitzvah of Shabbos in yesterday's parasha, so it says, Zochar es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that you should remember Shabbos to sanctify it. And in Parshas Veschanan, the Torah says, Shomar es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that you should guard Shabbos to sanctify it. Which the Chazal took to mean that Zohar refers to the positive mitzvahs of Shabbos, specifically refers to the mitzvah of making Kiddush on Friday night, the proclamation of Shabbos. And then Shomar refers to the guarding Shabbos from not desecrating it, from not doing any of the prohibited activities on Shabbos. So that's a very major difference. One is talking about the positive, one is talking about the negative. So as is well known, the Chazal say that in reality, these were both said at the same time, Zohar v'Shomar b'dibur echad, that they were said, but the Rabban Shalom said over when he said it, so both were said at the same time. It's not humanly possible. A person cannot do such a thing. But Hashem did this, and they were both said together. They were both said together. It's interesting that in the L'cha Dodi, the order is reversed. It's Shomar v'Zachar b'dibur echad. It's actually in the order of the Chumash. It would be the other way. It would be Zachar v'Shomar. The reason for that is because the author of the L'cha Dodi, Rav Shlomo Alkavitz, wanted to put his initials in the L'cha Dodi. So therefore, it fit. The shin was needed. If you ever checked it out, you'll see it says Shlomo Halevi, right? So the shin was the letter that he needed, so he reversed it. But the fact of the matter is that it's Zohar v'Shomar b'dibur echad. Okay, this is very famous. Now, there's a second difference. There are several differences, but the other substantive difference, the other difference which really seems to make a difference is if you look here on the sheet, so in Parshas Yisro, the Torah says, Lo sachmo beis re'echo, which we will translate loosely, you should not desire, you should not covet the house of your friend. Lo sachmo eishes re'echo, and you should also not desire your friend's wife, va'avdo, va'amoso, or his servants, shoro v'chamor, or any of his possessions, any of his animals, v'cho asher re'echo, anything that he has. And that's the end of the Aseres HaDibros that we have in yesterday's parasha. And in Parshas Veschanan, the Torah adds something. The Torah says, Lo sachmo eishes re'echa. And then there's a change in the terminology. It says, Velo sis aveh beis re'echa. That a person should, sis aveh, the word taiva we're familiar with, right, which means to desire, right? You should not desire the house of your friends, so deo avdo, etc. So there's a change in terminology between lo sachmo, lo sisave, which calls for an explanation. In other words, what's the difference? What's the difference? If they both mean the same thing, then why is the Torah changing the terminology? Okay, so this is a discussion amongst the Rishonim, what exactly the difference is. So there is a machlokas, but just to make life simple, we'll use the Rambam's opinion because that is the opinion that's brought to halacha. So the Rambam says here, if you look in the left-hand column, in the Sefer HaMitzvos LaHaRambam, so he presents the mitzvah of Lo Sachmod before Lo Sisaveh, and he says in the mitzvah of Lo Sachmod is Huzharnu Mehosim Machshav Oseinu Lasos Tachbula, that the Torah prohibited us from doing any sign, any type of manipulation, Kidei Liknos Masher B'Shus Zuloseinu Me'acheinu, in order to acquire that which somebody else has. V'hu Amru Lo Sachmot Beis Re'echa, that is what the Torah means when it says in yesterday's Pasha, Lo Sachmot Beis Re'echa. The Lashon Mechilta, and then he quotes from a Medrash of Halacha, it's called the Mechilta, that it says, Lo Sachmo, the Medrash of Chazal said, Yocho Afiu Chome B'dibur. What does it mean you should not covet that which someone else has? I would think that this means even to covet with Dibur, okay? That even if you just say you want it, Talmud Lomar, Lo Sachmo, Kesef Izov, Filokachtalach. So to that, the pasuk says, "Lo sachmo kesef izov." We find that in Parshas Ekev, the Torah, when it speaks about the prohibition of avodah zarah, so the Torah says, "Lo sachmo kesef izov lo kachtolach," that you should not take desire from the avodah zarah that the Klal Yisrael may capture when they enter into Eretz Yisrael. They should not desire the gold and the silver and take it. So says the Medrash, says the Mechilta, Malahawa Nachiasa Maisa, Adkan Nachiasa Maisa. Just like there, it's only when the person actually does something, so to here, it's only when the person does something. Which means that the prohibition of Lo Sachmo, contrary to popular belief, is not to stam desire something that somebody else has, but rather to desire it and then go ahead and take it from that person. To desire it and then somehow do some manipulation to take it from that person. By the way, I'm sorry, as an aside, I forgot to mention, did you mention this? Oh, okay, I apologize. The today's shir has been dedicated by Sheldon Gittleson, Lezecha Nishmas, his father's Yartzai Yitzchak Ben Rafal. I'm very sorry I didn't mention it at the beginning. I had it here and I overlooked it. The learning should be a ilui for his neshama. Anyway, returning to this, so what the sefer HaMitzvos HaRambam is saying is that the mitzvah of Lo Sachmod is not to go ahead and to see something that somebody else has and engage in activity to take it away from him, meaning to pressure him to sell it. That's the Isser of Lo Sachmo. Okay, now we'll skip down a little bit to the next paragraph, which is right under it, when he discusses what does it mean when the Torah said in Parshas Veschanan, Lo Sis Aveh, what does that mean? So here the Rambam says that Huzharnu Mehosim Machshavoseinu Lachmo Mashbi Arachenu Ulehisavazbo. So the Rambam says that the Isser of Lo Sis Aveh is actually a step before Lo Sachmod. Lo Sis Aveh is to desire something that somebody else has. And the Rambam proceeds to say, even if you don't end up taking it from that person, but you, in your mind, started to think of ways to go ahead and do that. In other words, a person went ahead and decided that he sees somebody else has something and he wants it. So if he simply in his mind, once the wheels start turning, okay, how could I do it, right? A businessman sees, let's say real estate, we'll discuss this, comes very commonly, where a person says, I want that house, right? So already the wheels start turning. How am I going to go ahead and get it from this person? That's Lo Sis Aveh. Okay, even if he didn't end up buying it. But if he pressures the person to buy it, then that's his next step. That is Lo Sachmo. Okay, now, the reason why this is a chiddush to people is because we live in a world of where, unfortunately, we suffer a lot from the dynamic of keeping up with the Joneses. That everybody has to keep up, right? The one person on the block fixes up the outside of their house, and the next thing you know, there's construction going on. Well, the whole block, the entire block, one person gets a new car, and everybody else starts getting new cars also. So that, although that is not a good type of behavior to engage in for a lot of reasons, but that's neither of these prohibitions, because in that situation, the person is going, there is, I'm going to fix up my house. I'm not taking your house. I'm not taking your car. I see you have a beautiful new car, and I want exactly that car, but I'm not going to go get it from you. I'm going to go to a dealer and get it. So that would really not be either of these two things. Okay, that's neither. That's not lo sachmo, that's not lo sesava. Is that a good idea? We'll soon see that that's not a good idea either. But the fact of the matter is that that's not a violation of this. Yes?
Once you have lo
sesava, what's kol shekein that you have lo sachmo? That's a good question. So the answer is, einachinami, that's true. But the lo sachmo is an additional lav, and the lo sachmo comes about, even as we'll see, even if the person sells it to you. In other words, even if the person goes ahead and says, it's not like you stole it. You didn't go ahead and rip it away from him. That's a chiddush, because ordinarily I would think that if the person sold it to me, say he sold it. Right? So that's an additional chiddush.
Yeah.
So we'll see about that. So now the underlying philosophy behind these mitzvahs, right? They're very difficult mitzvahs. The Torah basically saying that a person should not be interested in what anybody else has. So it's a, I think, fairly well-known explanation given by the Ibn Ezra in his commentary to the Chumash, which, even though it's not directly Nogea to Halacha, but it's worth mentioning. We have it here on the right-hand side of the page, that the Ibn Ezra asks the question that how could you have a mitzvah like this? How could the Torah legislate what you're supposed to think? In other words, it's one thing if you want to tell me how to act. So the Torah tells us how to act. Okay, don't eat not kosher food. Fine. So I won't eat not kosher food. But here you're telling me I can't think a certain thought. I can't desire something that somebody else has. So how could you stop that from happening? Thoughts come into a person's mind, right? And it's sort of like a natural process. How could the Torah go ahead and make a prohibition about that? So the Ibn Ezra gives an answer which is very fundamental, and that therefore it's really worth spending a moment on. The Ibn Ezra says that these mitzvahs hit at the core of emunah, at the core of faith in Hashem. And he gives the famous example of a farmer who, especially in the olden times, farmers were the example of an extremely unsophisticated person. Generally, farmers were not educated and so forth. So he gives the example of a farmer who sees a princess walking in the street, and she's in all her glory and glamour, and so the question is, does this farmer really think that he has any chance of marrying this princess? So he knows that it's absurd. There's no chance in the world that he's going to be able, even if he's, no matter how interested he is in her, there's no way he's going to get her to agree to marry him, because there are just too many differences that exist between them. And there's no way that she would be happy with him. He probably wouldn't end up being happy with her either. But there's no way that she'll be happy with him. So it says the Ibn Ezra that as a result of that, when a person knows that something is totally removed from them, this is something that has no shaychus to me. It's not something that has any bearing on me. So that could make it that a person will not have a desire for that element. In other words, the reason why people, psychologically, the reason why a person desires something is because they think that it's coming to me also such a thing. But if I know that this thing is, I can't possibly have this. I'm in a whole different place in life, a whole different world. This is not my world. So then a person will not desire that. So the Ibn Ezra says, he goes on, I'll just paraphrase it. So he says that the same thing is true by other people's possessions. Because a person has to realize that what a person has is decided by Hashem. Hashem decides, gzeira min hashamayim, right? So he says that isha, tzarech she, kol maskil tzarech she'eda, any intelligent person has to realize, ki isha yofa, that beautiful wife, or mamon, or money, lo yimsanu adam bavur chachmasel v'daito. It doesn't come to a person because of his talents. It doesn't, right? We know this is true. We don't know this is true, but the reality is that it's true, right? That a lot of things that happen to a person is mazel. You speak to even the wealthiest person, in an honest moment, will tell you that, yeah, I tried very hard, but I also caught a few breaks along the way. Things fell my way. And had they not, I wouldn't be where I am today. And that is nigzer min hashamayim. There are certain situations, right? The Ibn Ezra himself was known as very famous. I mentioned in the past, Ibn Ezra was in a business. He was a businessman. He was a very, very poor man. He failed in every business that he attempted. Right? He famously once commented that if he would have gone into the tachrichim business, if he would have gone into the shroud business, then people would have stopped dying. Right? Then if he would have gone into the candle business, then the sun would not set anymore, right? It would always remain light. That's how bad a businessman that he was, right? He said that whatever business he went into failed. Now, this is the same person whose commentary on the Chumash is one of the most basic Lefarshim that we have and is revered all through the generations, revered by other Rishonim, is quoted all the time by the Ramban, and so forth, so and is revered by us. So you'll say, how could that be? Such a capable, brilliant person, such a God-fearing person. How is it that he was such a miserable failure in his business? The answer is, it was Hashem's decided. That's the way it should be. That's his challenge in life. Everybody has challenges in life. That was his challenge. So therefore, that was Nigzim in Hashemayim. It was no fault of his own. That's nothing to do. And as he understood that. He said, listen, I'm a capable person. So why is it not working out for me? It's not working out for me because Hashem decided that this is the best thing for me. Right, the famous story with the Chafetz Chaim that a man was once having a very great struggle with his business, so he wanted to go for chizuk. The people towards the end of the Chafetz Chaim's life, he was already renowned as a world tzaddik and a gadol, so people used to go to him to speak to him. So this man shows up. So the Chafetz Chaim says, "What could I do for you? So what do you want to speak about?" So the man said, "Oi, Rebbe, my business. I have to speak about my business." So the Chafetz Chaim said, "What about it?" So the man said, it wouldn't hurt if it was a little better. It wouldn't hurt if it was going a little better. So the Chafetz Chaim looked at him and said, how do you know? So the man was shocked. He didn't think that the Chafetz Chaim heard him. So he said, no, you understand? I said it wouldn't hurt if it was a little better. That's what I came to speak about. So the Chafetz Chaim said, I heard what you said. How do you know it wouldn't hurt if it was a little better? In other words, if it was Nigzim in Hashemayim, it should be this way. So maybe Hashem knows better. Maybe it wouldn't be good for you if it went better. Maybe in some other way it wouldn't be good. We don't know the whole story. So these are the gut-wrenching issues of Emunah. The Emunah is not just, I believe in God. That's simple Emunah. But the Emunah runs on many levels. Many, many levels. We find in Parshas Bishalach, right before as a result of the Kriyas Yamsuf, so the Torah says, Vayaminu b'Hashem. That they believed in Hashem. So it's a very shocking way. Until now, they didn't believe in Hashem. What happened all the time in Mitzrayim and the Makkos and everything, they didn't believe. So the answer is that Emunah runs on a lot of levels. How deeply does a person have faith? So I believe there's a God in the world. Fine, I can't put on tefillin to keep the mitzvahs. Fine, that's very nice. But it runs on a lot deeper levels than that. How about it being accepting of your lot in life? Does a person trust God and say that, okay, I believe, okay, listen, I don't know why this is good. But apparently, this is supposed to be the best situation for me to be in. It's not the way I would have choreographed my life, but that's not the way it works. So that's what Ibn Ezra says. I know this is not supposed to be a Musa Shir, but it's Nogea to the Halacha very much. So therefore, this underlies, right, the Gemara says further, it's very, very well known. The Gemara says, B'ni Chayi U'mezone, that there are three things that are lav b'schus atalia. There are three things that come to the person completely, min ha-shamayim, b'ni, the person's children, right, how many children he has, etc. Chaye u'mezone means, chaye means his health, and mezone means his parnasa. All of these things are gzeiros min ha-shamayim, that a person, that it's not even totally in a schus, that sometimes it's nigzim min ha-shamayim, should be that way. It just should be that way. So therefore, the Torah instructs us that a person has to really accept this. So if that's the case, when I see something that somebody else has, I shouldn't want it because my immediate reaction should be the same as the reaction of the farmer who says, okay, I have no, there's no way, there's no way in the world that I'm going to get this girl to marry me. There's no way, right? So forget it. So I'm not even interested. I'm not interested because the human interest has to do a lot when you feel a connection, when you feel that this thing has some relevance to me. But if I know this has absolutely no relevance, then I'm not interested in it. So says Ibn Ezra that's the pshat in this mitzvah. The Torah says, lo sachmod, lo sisava. The person has to say, okay, the person has it, good for them. Good for them, that's all. I don't want it, I don't need it, finished. That's what he says. So therefore, this is so really, in truth, that would really speak even to the idea of Stam desiring it. But from a halachic standpoint, the Rambam tells us, based on various Maamar Chazal that are scattered, but primarily upon this Mechilta, that Lo Sisav and Lo Sachmod have to do with attempting to extricate something that somebody else has. To go to something, I see somebody else has something, and I want it, and I'm going to try to take it. So Lo Sisav is for the plan, and Lo Sachmod is for actually doing it. Okay, now, that being the case, so the Rambam says further, if you look here in the Hilchos Gzeilah on the bottom right of the sheet, so the Rambam codifies this in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam says, Kol achomed avdo amasel obeso v'kelev shel chaveru, any person who desires anything that his friend has, o kol davar she'efshalo she'ikneu mimenu, or anything that it's possible that he could acquire, v'hichbid olav bireyin, and he pressured the person. He pressured the person to sell it to him. There are many ways that a person can pressure somebody else to sell it. Okay, he pressured him. Sometimes you can get friends to speak to him. Sometimes you could get the Rav to speak to him. Right? I say, I want this house. I'll get the rabbi to go speak to him. He can't say no to the rabbi. So the rabbi will speak to him. Or I'll get some prestigious person to speak to him. Or some person that he's afraid of, that he's afraid of crossing. Somebody who did favors for him in his past. Somebody who once loaned him a lot of money. He doesn't want to say no to this person. So therefore, I'll go to that person who happens to be my friend and say, please tell this guy, pressure him to sell his house to me. I want his house. Or I want this that he has. Says the Rambam, a person who does that, hareze over, afal pisha noslo domim rabim. Says the Rambam, it doesn't help if you paid him lots of money, right? The mafia, the famous expression, will make you an offer that you can't refuse, right? So I'll go ahead, I'll pay him fortunes of money, much more than he would have gotten. That's how I rationalize it, right? I want his house. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pay you much more than the market. But the guy doesn't want to sell it. He doesn't want to sell it, but the buyer wants it, so he stops at nothing, and he keeps pressuring him. And he justifies it to himself by saying that, well, he's coming out ahead. Look, he's getting much more money from me than he'd get from anybody else. So the Rambam says, I raise the over below, so I say this is a violation of the law in the Torah, Shenem Elo Sachmo. This is one of the Aseres HaDibros. Right? The reason why this is in the Aseres HaDibros, in case the person wondering, how did this make it into such a lofty level? Because like we saw in the Ben Ezra, because this is a fundamental emunah. This hits on the emunah. So therefore, it's not just another law and business law. It's not just another din and choshe mishpat. This has to do a lot with a person's faith. So therefore, this is what Rambam says. Yes? Of woe? Not to steal, because he's paying for it. Because you're paying for it. Stealing is when you take something without paying for it. I'm paying for it. Not only am I paying for it, I'm overpaying for it. I'll give him plenty of money. Money means nothing to me. I want his house. I'll give him plenty of money, right? This happens all the time with developers, right? That they want to develop a certain property, they want to develop whatever, and there's this one person who's in the way, so they're gonna go ahead and that's it, you know, it's a big developer, he has loads and loads of money, so it doesn't mean anything to him. It's worth it, I'll pay double, I don't care. I'll pay double, just to get the house. Now, does this mean that you're not allowed to ever do such a thing? This means that you can't, what do you mean? But maybe the guy you're going to wants that. Maybe the guy, it happens a lot of times, that the person is happy to sell the house, right, when they get the offer. So the difference is, that's what it depends on. In other words, to make someone an offer, there is nothing wrong, right? There is nothing wrong with doing this if you think that the person wants it. In other words, if you, it happens to be a very common thing in Jewish neighborhoods, you know, Jews begin to move into a certain neighborhood, and slowly but surely the goyim, you know, two things happen. Number one, the houses become very desirable because other Jews want to move in, especially religious neighborhoods, right? So once they have a setup in the community, they have all the stores that they need and the shuls and the mikveh and everything, so now already everybody wants to come in. So the houses, you know, go up in value, and a lot of times the non-Jews who live in the neighborhood begin to feel uncomfortable because, you know, there's not my people anymore. There's already all these religious Jews here, and I feel a little bit uncomfortable. So to go over to such a person and make him an offer, and he goes along with it, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with going over to a Jew either, for that matter, and saying, can I interest you in selling your house? In other words, it happens to be I'm looking to move in here, or I'm looking to develop this land, at this property, and, you know, I your house is part of I've acquired all the surrounding properties, but your house is the last one. Are you interested in selling? So if he's interested in selling, there's no problem whatsoever. That's fine. You're allowed to make that offer to him. But what happens a lot of times is that the person's not interested in selling, and then the pressure begins. Then you start to pressure him to do it. So this comes up in a lot of situations. So like I say, it comes up in real estate, but it comes up in other things too. It comes up sometimes with mitzvahs. Right, they're very interesting. If you turn over the page we have here on the right-hand side, so contemporary posek, Rabbi Tzalot Stern, he was a European Rav, he was a Rav in Switzerland. So he was asked the question, by certain chassidim in particular, there's a custom that they bake matzahs for Pesach, so they should have Erev Pesach matzahs. That the most matzah bakeries, right, just in case you're wondering, the matzah bakeries are all alive and well. They're all up and running right now as we speak, right, even though Pesach is still several months off, but they're already baking around the clock because the demand for it is so high. You go in New York, the matzah bakeries are all out there, right, but they don't bake all the way up until Pesach. They usually stop. They're already done by, I don't know when, but they're done in a while in advance, 2 weeks, let's say, in advance. However, they reopen Erev Pesach. They reopen Erev Pesach because it's a custom that people have. It's actually a very good custom if it's possible to do correctly. You know, some people say that in the whole rush on Erev Pesach, they worry that it won't be done correctly. But anyway, a lot of, by Chassidim in particular, there's an inyan that they have Erev Pesach matzahs. So the question came up that there was a certain place, it doesn't say where, a European town where it came Erev Pesach and people wanted the matzahs. And somehow the owner of the bakery miscalculated and he didn't have any more shmura flour. He didn't have. So they said, what could I do? The only person that had was the rabbi of the community. He had bought a certain amount of that flour that he had and he wanted it that he should make his Erev Pesach matzahs. So the people heard about this, so they came to, so sure enough, the rabbi went into this, you know, got the people to help him, and he made his matzahs, and everyone else prevailed upon him, can we have some of your matzahs? So it says there that the rabbi was, so the story was that the rabbi said, fine, I'll, you know, whatever, he gave them, he kept for himself only the minimum that he needed for the Seder, and he gave away everything else, so he sold it to whatever it was, he sold it to them. So the question was, the people were asking, is this Lo Sachmod? Is this Lo Sachmod? Because maybe it's not right. Maybe he wanted to have, he didn't just want to have the minimum amount of matzahs. He wanted to have these matzahs, that he should have enough, that he shouldn't have to start, being very mitzamsem, having been very, very, limited in how much he's going to use. He wanted to have a lot. So this question was asked to this Rav. So he discussed, very interesting. So he comes out, that he came out that he found out the story, and apparently the people did not put undue pressure on the rabbi. I don't know if they threatened they wouldn't renew his contract if he didn't sell them the matzahs. Unclear, but it seems that that's not what happened. And he sold them the matzahs, and that was it. So he says that's mutter, because to just ask a person if he wants to do it, he's interested in doing it, okay? He's interested in doing it, and he said, yeah, he's happy to help out. That was the story. He said that's mutter. So if you look here on the lines that are underlined, he says that in a situation slightly before that, before Daito Shim Chomad Chayfetz Chaveru, that if a person wants something that somebody else has, V'kasher Bikesh Mibal HaChayfetz L'machrolo, when he approaches the owner, Tekev Hiskim HaLolakach, the owner immediately goes along with it, so Ein B'zeh Mishum Lo Sachmod. So this is not a problem. The only time this prohibition applies is where the person was not interested in selling. For who hifzer bo, and he got pressured into doing it. He got pressured into doing it. That would be a situation of losachmot. So therefore, we have to really, a person has to think, this comes up in a lot of situations, and apparently you see from this that the justification that I needed for a mitzvah is not enough, because what he's saying here is they needed it for a mitzvah, but he said, okay, even you need it for a mitzvah, you have to present it the right way. This rabbi was not upset so much. In other words, apparently when they explained to him that they didn't have, and he had, so he happily gave it to them. But had that not been the case, so then it would have been los nachmot. You need it for a mitzvah, so what? So what? You can't violate an isser in the Torah for a mitzvah. So therefore, generally speaking, a person has to keep this in mind. A lot of situations where that comes up, where a person says, that seat in the shul starts to sell the seats. You know, so I didn't get there in the first day that they were selling the seats in the shul, and the seat that I wanted, somebody took. Somebody bought that seat, and I want the seat. I want that seat, especially I have emotional ties to it because my father sat in the seat, my grandfather sat in the seat. So okay, maybe there's an issue of chazaka, that could be, but assuming that there isn't, right? So I feel bad that this person got what I wanted. So now I'm going to go and pressure him, and I'm upset that he got it, and he doesn't want to sell it. He doesn't want to say, God doesn't want to sell it. Well, you can have, quite frankly, you have a situation where a person, they sold aliyahs in the shul, and I have yard sight. So maybe they shouldn't have sold the aliyah. But in this shul, they sell the aliyahs even to people of yard site. They don't, let's say, whatever it is, right? They want to maximize the profits, so we'll get the guy with yard site to, right? So whatever, I lost the bid. The person stepped out to the bathroom, he missed out. He missed out. He didn't have the chance to get the mafter or the aliyah that he wanted. Now he comes in, he says he has yard site. Somebody bought the aliyah. So, okay, it very well likely could be that if the person who bought it was a mensch, he would say, all right, you have yards, I'll give you the aliyah, whatever. Fine. But let's say for whatever reason, he doesn't want to sell it. So he doesn't want to sell it. So you could go to him. So the B'tzel HaChochma, this sefer, paskin, that the sheer, how much is too much pressure? He said you could approach him once or twice, and that's it. If after two times the person says, I don't want to sell it, then it's losachmod to pressure him to sell it. You can't go back to him and say, I insist you sell it. It happens so many situations, you know, where things like this could be. If somebody got something that I wanted, he got it first for whatever reason. I didn't know it was for sale. I didn't know. And now I found out and I want it, and the person who bought it doesn't want to sell it. He doesn't want to sell it. So there's a limit to what you could do. So the thing to do would be is to approach him nicely, maybe make him a good offer, or offer, that's worthwhile for him to relinquish it. But if for whatever reason the person says, I don't want to sell it after two times, now I have to ask him, and you're certainly not allowed to pressure him. You can't get people, it happens a lot, that you'll get the friends, they'll all come and pressure him, they'll lay guilt on him, they'll all kinds of things, and I'll get someone, like I said earlier, I'll get someone who we can't say no to go over. That's wrong. It's wrong to do that. Yes, I'm sorry. Wait. Yeah.
Like, there's some certain people, specifically some Torah.
Yeah.
They really want this particular people.
Right.
So now,
right.
I'm going to pressure him either to really pay for that kibbutz,
right,
or lose the kibbutz. Right?
You mean they're extorting the? In other words, he has yard site, and they're going to. They decided they know he has yard site, so they'll sell the aliyahs just because he has yard site. They'll sell the aliyahs, and the bidding starts at $250 per aliyah. Right. And yeah, okay, so that's wrong too. That's also like a form of extortion to what do you, yeah, but again, it, you have to know the ins and outs. In other words, shul has the right to make certain policies. The shul sells kibbutzim, they sell kibbutzim. Sometimes they sell kibbutzim and they don't pay attention. Like Yom Narum, very often this happens, that the shul announces that for Yom Narum, we don't honor yard sites. If you have yard site and you want that, you have to pay for it. We're going to auction off because it's a big fundraiser for the shul. So we're going to auction off all our aliyahs. And if you happen to have yards or Hashanah Yom Kippur, whatever it is, so okay, you could enter the bidding. But the person, what do you mean? But the rest of the year, if I had a yard site, they would give me the aliyah without a problem. But the difference is that the shul says, but we don't sell the aliyahs the rest of the year. So we can get $200-$300 for this aliyah. And you have yards, you want it for free. Okay, I'm not saying what the right thing is, but there are shuls that do both. There are some shuls that will say, okay, the member in the shul will give it to him, and there are other shuls that will say, no, it's a big loss. It's a big loss for us. You want it, so pay for it. So let's say somebody else got it, you didn't know, or whatever, however it happened to be, so this is a very big question, if you could pressure him. Yes, I'm sorry.
so I'm supposed to get Aliyah before you, so you got it. So you go to the Rav and say, look, halacha state, I don't need for it.
Okay, if the halacha says it, then maybe they shouldn't sell it. So then maybe the shul...
The fact that it happened, that it was done, is that considered a pressure? Or
if it's against the halacha, it's probably not a pressure. In other words, they didn't do the right thing. It was an avu what they did, so then they shouldn't have sold in the first place. But if it was done, and it was done beheter, they had the right to do it. So somebody else got it. So what are you going to do? He has it. So you're going to pressure. He doesn't want to sell it. It's one thing if you, sometimes, okay, I didn't know. So okay, I bid $200 for the Aliyah. So you'll give me the $200 and then and you can have it. Fine. That's no problem. A lot of times that's what does happen. But there are some times that the person insists that he wants this Aliyah, even though he doesn't have yard site. He wants this Aliyah because he has a tradition, his family, right? You have, for example, the Shira in Parshas Bishalach. So aside from the Chashivas of the Shira, there's a pasuk there, the very last pasuk of the Aliyah is a Kalamacha, Ashesantim Yisayim, Olosim Alecha, Kieni Hashem Rofecha, people who are not well like that Aliyah. It's a school to get that Aliyah. Right, so a guy says, so a person says, I want that Aliyah, but this one wants it because it's the Shira, right? It's in the same Aliyah. So you have a whole situation. So, okay, you have to know. In other words, the bottom line is it comes up in all kinds of situations, but my point is that mitzvahs don't make it better. The fact that it's a mitzvah, so yeah, if the person bought it, and he's happy to sell it to you, that's fine. But if he's not happy to sell it to you, to pressure him into do it, even if you don't end up succeeding, to plan to do it is the Isser of Lo Sis Aveh, that's what it says in Parshas Eschanan, and to succeed is Lo Sachmod as well. So it's two Averis. Yes, Rabbi.
Does it apply, I think it applies the same for Guy as well? In other words,
I believe so. It's the same. Yes, so they want to get rid of him.
They
want to
get rid of that guy.
Okay, I don't know. So that's a Shiloh person. After ask a posting. I don't know. It could be dangerous. Okay, it could be.
I assume that's.
It could be. But other. Okay, so maybe then there's a heter if it's some sort of sakon. I don't know, but otherwise the person has to be careful. Yes.
If Hashem said my sachmai,
yes,
and nothing else.
Yes.
Like, how did Moshe add a new element,
Moshe's Aven? That's a good question. How did that Seres HaDibros change in Parshas Veschanan? So this is a big discussion amongst the Mefarshim. And there are those who say that the same way Zohar V'Shomer was said B'Dibur Echad, there are those who say that Lo Sachbo and Lo Sisavo were also said B'Dibur Echad. There are people that say that the Zohar V'Shomer is the most prominent because the whole observance of Shabbos that we have comes from Shomer, and Shomer was not in the Aseres HaDibros in the original rendition of it. So that became famous. But there are people that say that. This is a very important discussion. The Ramban, in his Parish in the Devarim, says that there's a question also, what did it say on the Luchos? That's a question. What did it say on the Luchos? Which one did it say? Did it say what it said in yesterday's Parsha? Did it say what it says over there? So there's also a whole range of opinions. There are those who say that yesterday's rendition is the version that we were on the first, the original Luchos, and then the second Luchos had the later rendition, but that's not, a lot of people don't agree with that. That the Netziv said that. But other people say that Ben Ezra, the Ramban seems to indicate that in Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying things over in his words, the way he understood them, that the Kla Yisrael should best understand it. So therefore, according to the Ramban, I believe the Pshat is that Moshe knew that when Hashem said Lo Sachmon, he meant both. But it wasn't clear. So when it came to Veschanan, he said it over that way. He expanded. That's what the Ramban says. Ibn Ezra says a different shot. There's a whole range of opinions. But some ask that question. Some ask that it comes out according to the. Some ask that on the Rambam actually, that the Rambam counts it as two separate mitzvahs. I didn't want to get involved with this, but now that you're mentioning it, right? So there are those who say it's not the smag sefer mitzvah. So Godel says it's one mitzvah. And one of the riots that he brings against the Rambam, he says, according to the Rambam, there were 11 commandments, not 10, because there's an 11th commandment. Lo Sisavah. What about that? So, okay, that question is a good question, but it's debatable because you'll say, so Shamar V'Zachar is also, you have that question. So, all right, whatever. But the basic idea is that it was understood on Har Sinai that Hashem meant both of these things. That's what I think you have to say. I'm just going to order. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So, let's talk about forcing someone to,
Pressuring someone to sell.
But what about in the case of the Sakhmoed?
Okay, oh, it's a good question. Okay, 1 minute. Okay, 1 minute. Yes, go. So what does mean lo sachman eishes re'echa? Okay, what does mean lo sachman eishes re'echa? So the Sma in the Shulchan Aruch says, it's not on the sheet, but you'll trust me on this. The Sma says that gam be'eishes chavercha shayich zeh, sheyigrom sheyigreshena baylu. Sometimes, in a really bad situation, unfortunately this happens sometimes, that a person so much wants that woman that he'll do different manipulations to break up the marriage. He'll do manipulations to break up the marriage, and then he'll marry her. The guy, they'll get divorced because he created all kinds of problems, right? And he upset the whole Shalom Bayis with a scheme. In other words, he's doing it, he made it like he's a big tzaddik, and he has a whole scheme that he's trying to do. So if he does that, even for plotting to do that, he's over this Elos Sava, and if he actually succeeds and marries this woman, so he's over this Elos Achmod. No, he says he's... very good question. So you'll say, but the Chumash doesn't say that. Very good. The Chumash doesn't say that. So they ask that question also. So they say that the reason why... what do they say? They ask this question. They answer that the reason why the Chumash says lo sachmod by Yeshus Re'echa, not lo sisave, is because of the fact... I don't remember, but there's an answer. I'm sorry, slipped my mind. It's discussed in the Mefarshim. I think it's the same type of thing that because it even goes that far. In other words, the chiddush is that like lo sisave is, it didn't need to be said, because that's the type of thing that very commonly when it comes to Eishes Re'echa, a person would have such a feeling. So the Torah went further and said that the lo sachmod, I think, something along those lines. I don't know. That's discussed, that question. Yeah, because kol asher l're'echa, right. In other words, because it says at the end, lo sisave, kol, that's right. That's one of the things that they say. Because the pasuk says, lo sisave beis re'echa, and then it ends, kol asher l're'echa. And you can't, anything that he wants, anything includes his wife. Right, that's what they say.
If he approaches a husband and he's too eager or willing to part with his wife, then I should probably think this.
Yeah, okay. So that's already a different... Okay, all right. Okay. Now, another question which comes up is, does lo sachmod apply to gifts? What about you pressuring somebody to give you a gift? Okay, pressuring someone to give you a gift. This commonly could happen, especially a person that's very careful, a rav of a shul, has to be very careful about this, because the congregants of Balabatim, I mean Mechabed the Rav. So yeah, oh Rabbi, if you want, I'll give it to you. But maybe the guy doesn't want to give it. You have to know. Does he really want it? I'll give it to you for free, because he feels uncomfortable charging the Rav. Right? The Rabbi came over to him, and he bought the Aliyah, and the Rabbi said, I didn't know they sold Aliyahs either. They didn't tell me. And I have Yahrzeit this week, so can I have the Aliyah? So, oh, Rabbi, for you for sure. But this other guy also has Yahrzeit, so he really doesn't want to sell it. And in some cases, he'll give it to the Rabbi even for free. So that's a very big quiet person. The Rav has to be very careful about this, because if you or any person of prestige who sometimes can do to his prestige, people will honor him, has to really assess. If they're honoring him with something of their property, do they really want to give it to him? Sometimes a person will say, oh, it's such a covet for me that you should have it. Of course, 100%. Right? In other words, let's say the rabbi walking to shul on Sukkot, the first morning of Sukkot, dropped his esrog and the pitten broke off. So he doesn't have an esrog. So what's he going to do? It's embarrassing. He's going to stand up there with no esrog. So he goes over to one of the people and says, I don't have an esrog. Oh, rabbi, for sure, 100%. Maybe he's not so happy to do it. How do you know? He bought the esrog. He wants to shake the lulav himself. He wants to shake the lulav during halal. You have to know. You really have to make a good assessment. Otherwise, lo sachmod, you're forcing him to give it. But more than that, the Chafetz Chaim says a remarkable thing. The Chafetz Chaim says in the Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, we have it here on side B, the bottom left, He says, "Oda marti la'orer al davar achshen chsholim bo b'nei adam." He says, "I want to say a comment about something that a lot of people stumble in." And he says, in the inyan of shidduchim, that what happens? So you have a shidduch, and the boy and the girl get engaged. They get engaged. The shidduch went through. So now we have the great Jewish ritual of the exchange of gifts. Okay, so he has to give her this, and she has to give that, and they have to have flowers, and they have to cost a certain amount, and a ring, and a watch, and a this, and a that, and the other thing. Okay, so now what happens is, so sometimes these things could be discussed in advance, right? Not the most pleasant conversations, but, you know, when the shidduch was being, so to speak, negotiated. So, okay, so it was, all right, this is what we're expecting. This is what we're expecting. If you want to enter into this shidduch, this is what we're expecting. The other side, this is what we're expecting. Okay, so the Chafetz Chaim says, if that's what you, if people agree to that, then that's up to them. That it may not be the most tasteful thing in every situation, but okay, if that's what everyone agreed to, that's what everyone agreed to. But what happens is, then it's already past that point. And now, I had this, I was once called with this question years ago, amazing, I didn't even know such a thing existed, it was a shidduch that went through, and part of the understanding was that the girl was going to buy the chassan an atara for his talus. An atara for his talus, okay, fine, not just so you can get him a talus, you can get him an atara, and talus expensive item, sterling silver. So what was the issue? The issue was that when it came to the actual giving of the gift, it was not well received. Why not? Because of the fact that the boy's family said, "How dare you give our son a four-row atara? We expect a five-row atara." Okay? Now, I never knew there was such a thing, but I will tell you that ever since then, anytime I'm in a shul, I count people's rows. So if you have an atara on your talus, stay away from me. Because I tell this all the time to people, this story will change your life. You know, sometimes, yeah, Rav says this story will change your life. This story will mamash change your life, because every time, I didn't know such a thing. And then, ever since then, I can't help, I can't help myself. The reason I wasn't called because I was a great authority, it was a relative of mine who this happened to. So yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
On Simchas Torah.
Yeah.
I have a talus. I have an atara that goes from the neck all the way down to the bottom.
Whoa.
Walk around like that.
Okay, you got to get a security guard. You got a bodyguard. Uh-huh. Yeah, all right. Okay, so now what? So here you have the situation. We want the five-row atara. Now, the person who spoke to me about it said that, I don't know how much, I don't have a tarma talus, but I was told that every row is several hundred dollars. Or at least at that time it was. I don't know what the price of silver is now. But whatever, the expenses were adding up, and they said, you know, enough is enough. We and especially, it happened to be that this family didn't have the minhag of giving ataras, but they had a shidduch with a family that did have it, so they were already biting the bullet, so biting the atara, so to speak. So they said, hey, go ahead, and they're gonna go give this thing. So this is an issue of losachmot. This is if they don't want to give it, this is what the Chafetz Chaim says. Chafetz Chaim says, he says that, he, if you read this here, and save time, I won't read the whole thing, but he says at the end of the parentheses, he says, and then they start in with pressure, and with shidduchim is big pressure. Big, big pressure, because there's always the threat that will back out, and then it'll cause all kinds of embarrassment, so there's major league pressure in a situation like that. So he says that, it's also to do such a thing. He says, l'chari yesh b'zeh l'avdolo sachmot. And I, just for the record, it happens to be that there is some dispute amongst the Rishonim whether Losachmot applies to gifts, but the commonly held opinion, at least L'chumra, the Rabbeinu Yonah says in the Shari Tshuva, it's here on the sheet, that it applies to a gift as well. So therefore, certainly, it's unclear whether, you know, everybody agrees, but there's no question that there are enough people out there, including the Chafetz Chaim, who held that it does apply to such a thing. They have to be careful. This is a very serious thing. When it comes to shidduchim, there's a very, very big problem. You know, we expect this to be given to our child. Did you say that in advance? If you didn't say it in advance, and now they're unprepared for this, and they're not, it's hard for them. It's hard for them to do it. So that's a yisidaraisa lo sachmo. How can you do that? You're forcing a person to give something of his that he doesn't want to give you. And whether it's you're forcing him to give a gift or you're forcing him to sell it to you, so this is lo sachmo. Yes, sir.
Aren't all these things that all those gifts, the back and forth, their very nature forced?
Are they forced? Okay, that's already, I don't know. So you could say that it's already accepted. Everybody, sover v'kibo, everybody knows. Certain things everybody knows. Everybody, this is customary, but not every community has the same customs, right? And a lot of times, this happens all the time. This is Maisim B'chol Yom that this happens, unfortunately. That people get caught. I didn't know that. Or sometimes first time that they're marrying off their first child, they just didn't know. I didn't know this was expected, right? And so all right, sometimes people will say, all right, well, in the interest of Shalom, so I'll do it. And I'll even do it happily. Okay, whatever. It's another few dollars of spending so much money, but sometimes it's a lot of money. Sometimes a lot of money. What's that?
Parents of Bella
Chuba. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. You could have a situation where the parents don't know anything from this because they're not in the community that's aware of these minhagim. So there's no, that doesn't make it any better. They didn't know. They're not religious. They know. So what? So it doesn't matter if they didn't know. So you should have told them. And if you didn't tell them in advance, you can't say that, guess what? In our community, we give the kallah min kot, right? You didn't tell me that. Maybe if you would have told me that, I wouldn't have agreed to this. So you didn't tell me that. If I'm not happy to do it, it's an issa d'oraisa. You're not allowed to do something. We're not allowed to do it.
That's the Yiddish expression,
mentarnished health. Yes,
right. Isn't there a fundamental, obviously what Stan's talking about this case, but why is that, if you're talking about forcing somebody to give an object that they own, I hear that's Osaka.
Right.
If you're forcing somebody to give a gift,
his money.
It's his money.
Yeah, I don't want to give away my money. You're forcing me to give away my money. I don't want to give you my money. I worked hard for this money. I don't want to give it away. Huh?
The
Osachmon is that you're forcing me to give my hard-earned money. That's why there are Rishonim. No, you're right. That's why there are those who say that. There are Rishonim who say that by a matana. There are opinions that say that. But clearly the Chafetz Chaim is not of that opinion. They hold diatribe over here about it. Okay, now, just to finish up. So, yes.
It's almost any union of negotiation, though. Because once it gets to a point, you're almost being forced your hand because you want something.
Okay, so but in a negotiation where everybody, in other words, okay, it that may be true. In other words, so in other words, like this, in a regular, so I think the Polskim say you have to determine, is this a regular form of negotiation? In other words, if you go into a store, so in, the Jewish world, we have this time-honored tradition that you bargain every price. Right? In other words, you can't do that in Macy's, but if you go into Hamish's store, right, I was once standing in a store in a certain well-known Jewish community where someone said to the storekeeper, how much is it? So the person said, $43. So the person said, can't be 42. So, if it would have been 42, it can't be 41. You know, it's like a mitzvah. It's like part of the experience. Like it's your whole essence is up at stake if you don't get the best price. So to negotiate a price and the seller, you have to know. Sometimes the seller says, all right, because it's a game. It's a game. It used to be that way. Now it's already, we've moved past that. But I remember as a kid, going to buy an Esrig, and it was always this, the games and the back and forth, and he starts to walk away, and then the seller chases after him. Oh, come back. Okay. So if it's known that everybody plays this game, that's one thing. Or in a business negotiation where it's known that everyone does it, that's also good. But sometimes you could wear a person down. I've seen this, where in stores, there's a nudnik that comes into the store, and whatever says in the price tag, it has to be less. So the store owner says, no. And eventually, I can't say no anymore. Okay, just do what you want. Just go get lost.
Just
give me what you want and get lost. That's a nisadarasa. That could be zelo also. That could be zelo, because they don't really want to sell it to you for that price. Just that you basically wore them down. So they what's he going to do? It's not worth it to him already to argue. It's not worth it. The guy says, not worth it. My blood pressure is going so high already. I'll just do what you want. So that's wrong. It's 100% wrong. It's awesome mamish to do such. It could be gzela. It could be gzela, but it's definitely lo sachma. Okay, now, just to finish up. So what about, though, the keeping up with the Joneses? So the Aruch HaShulchan says here on the top of the page, so he says, v'af al pi shemimidus chasidus shlo lachmot klal afil b'lev mashiyesh l'chavero. So what we've said all along is that the isser is to try to take something that somebody else has and to pressure him to sell it or to plan to get him to do it. But what about, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to walk around envious of this person. I'm not going to do anything, but I'm just going to be jealous of this person every time I see it. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that even though technically that's neither of these prohibitions, but mimidus chasidus, in other words, the right thing to do is the person shouldn't do that either. In other words, it also comes to the same emunah, that all of jealousy is traced to this element of a person has to have a certain faith that Hashem knows what he's doing and he's concerned about me, and if this is what I have, then that's what's good for me, and I should orient myself to that and not question it. The problems that people have is because they question that. They don't understand, how could that be? How could that be, right? Well, it doesn't make sense. So then already, that's what the Ben Ezra was saying, that once you entertain the notion that it really should be mine, that's where all the trouble starts. But if a person initially said, okay, good for him that he has it, finished, that's all. I'm not envious, good for him, that's all. So then it's easier to come to terms with it. The problem starts when a person, if a person has deep faith and he says, it obviously wasn't meant for me. If it was meant for me, I'm going to give it to me. So that's already, that makes it a much easier process. But these Yisurim come up a lot. It comes up in negotiations of real estate commonly. A bid was accepted and now somebody else wants to come in on top of it and undermine it. All kinds of questions come up, and these are serious shilos and halacha. It's not a joke. They're real. This is aseres hadibros. A person sometimes rationalizes doing certain things wrong, but if you tell them, this is one of the Ten Commandments, like, I wouldn't want to violate one of those, right? So a lot of them are not, all right, we could stay away from them without that much difficulty. Not all of them, but a bunch of them. But this is something that comes up all the time. Okay, finally, last but not least, we come to the question, so what about a fundraiser? A fundraiser for yeshiva calls up a guy and says, listen, we'd like you to make a major donation to our upcoming dinner.
You're the honoree.
You'd be the honoree, or whatever, not the honoree. We would like X amount of money. And the person says, I really don't, I'm not really interested in giving it at this time. So then the next day, so his friend calls him and says, by the way, I send my son to that yeshiva. Or I daven in this shul, right? And I would like this done. It means a lot to me. And then his rabbi calls him and says, this tzedakah that they're raising money for, this is my favorite tzedakah. And I helped you out over this past year very much. So maybe you should give money to this. So you're pressuring the person to give away his money to tzedakah. So do we say that just because it's stuck, it's mutter?
Mutter.
Right. So all the fundraisers of the world have unanimously paskin that it's mutter. The question is that true? Is that true? So here, what you could say is that this is discussed in Poskim. I was not able to track down the svarim that discusses one sefer in particular. I wasn't able to track down. But basically, the way I saw it quoted over is like this. There is an underlying concept that says that if a person is mechuyev to do something, so then even if you have to coerce them to do it, sometimes Bezdin can force a person to do a certain mitzvah, whatever it is, and even mitzvahs where the Torah says that you have to do it with das, like for example you have in the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, so certain times a person pledges to bring a carbon and then he doesn't want to actually do it, so it's the Torah says l'ritzono that he has to do it happily, so the Gemara says what happens if wants to back out of it, so the kofen also, they could force him to do it, so the question is but it says l'ritzono, so he's not doing it willingly. So the answer is given. The Rambam writes somewhere that because deep down that's what he wants, because he wants to do the right thing. And if it's the right thing, he'll do it. So that being the case, some want to say that if it's a question of tzedakah and the person has anyway a chiyuv to give tzedakah, So even you're pressuring him to do it, but deep down, at the end of the day, I know it's the right thing to give this tzedakah. I'm a chiyuv to give tzedakah anyway. So if I'm mechuyev to give staka, so maybe I wouldn't have given it to this cause, whatever it is. But ultimately, what you're getting me to do is something that I would have done, I would have had to do anyway, so that might make it okay. The question would be, what happens if the person has already satisfied his requirements of staka? He gave his meister already, so now what? So now, but he has a lot of money, so he's allowed to give more, so you're going to go after him to get more. So now he's not mechuyev to give it. He's not mechuyev to give it. So I don't know. I don't want to start trouble. I certainly don't want to lose my job. But I don't know. This is a question that a person could ask. In other words, at a certain point, maybe it's too much. You can't. You know, it's enough already. You sent 20 people to speak to me. I'm sorry. I don't want whatever, for whatever reason. I can't do it. So at a certain point, does this cross into the lines of los achmo? This is a good question. I'm not saying definitively one way or the other. I couldn't research it. I couldn't get to the bottom of it. But these are all areas that come up, and it comes up in life, and a lot of times, you know, it becomes a very emotional issue. But we have to be aware that these are shilas that need to be asked when situations present themselves. And certainly, you know, the fact that in the dog-eat-dog business world, certain things are done doesn't make it mutter for Jews to act that way. In other words, we have to answer to a higher calling. That's just the way it is. Right? We say it all the time. So that's it. The Torah wasn't given to the Goyim. The Torah was given to the Jews. So you have to answer to a higher, you have to play to a higher standard. So even if it's done in the business world that way, a person has to ask, is this mutter? Sometimes it could be it is. But a person should be aware of it, and when a shiloh comes up, should ask it to the proper authority. Shikai.